Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's political podcast. I'm Lara Prendergast and I'm now joined by James Forsyth and Katie Balls. So James, Tony Blair has again intervened in the EU debate. What's he said?
He's talked about the second referendum again, about reversing Brexit. And I mean, the problem here is it's not what he says. People just see the messenger. And you know that when you hear that Blair is going on the Today programme, the reactions to it are entirely predictable, which is, 45 minutes, weapons of mass destruction, etc., etc., etc. The British public are just determined not to listen to him. And I think this is one of the problems for the kind of pro-second referendum cause. They need some surprising different voices. When Nick Clegg and Tony Blair are your two main spokespeople, they've both got kind of certain, to quote Blair himself, these huge questions about trust hang around their necks. And so I think if they are going to make some real progress towards this, they will need some people who are not former politicians with trust problems to advocate their cause.
Katie, do you think there is actually any chance of a second referendum, or is it just a Remainer pipe dream?
Well, I think James is right in the sense that not with the current people who are calling for it. I think if you were really going to get momentum for a second referendum, it would be done. If you had, a prolific Leave campaign has suddenly changed their mind because they decided that it wasn't going the right way and something like that. But if it's just the same people who are saying Remain from the very, very beginning, and quite like a strong side of Remain, not, the kind of perhaps more pragmatic Remainers, I don't think it changes much. And you also had that with Lord Adonis when he resigned with his two-pronged resignation letter over Christmas, where he, part of that was on transport and infrastructure, which was his job for the government, and the other half was on Brexit. But he's someone who always was against leaving the EU. I think what's quite interesting about what Tony Blair was saying today was he was very critical of the government, but he was perhaps more critical or more angry of Jeremy Corbyn and the direction Labour is taking, and really calling from them to kind of adopt a new approach. And he said they would be, I think, the handmaiden of Brexit, like the facilitator. And I think the problem for Labour is they have been quite vague up until now, and they've managed to do quite well on that because no one's quite sure what Labour's position is. It seems to change every day. But at some point they will be pinned down because they'll have to vote on the final deal and say whether we're leaving or they're going to try and bring down the government.
Moving on to Angela Rayner, who's been interviewed in The Spectator this week by our editor, Fraser Nelson. James, what did you find most interesting about it?
Well, the news line that's kind of making headlines today is when she talks about shit or bust being Labour's approach to the economy. This obviously has some appeal to the Tories because it suggests how much of a risk Corbyn is, which is the argument they really failed to get going in the last election. And I think this is, you see here, this is the kind of dividing lines the Tories would like to fight the next election on, which is, do you want to stick with them or do you want to take this big risk on Jeremy Corbyn? I think that line is harder to play than before for the Tories, because obviously Brexit is a risk. And so it's harder for them when they are doing Brexit to say, oh, look at this. But I think there is a Tory hope that by the time in the next election, Brexit will be done. The deal will be reasonable to good. It will beat expectations of voters, particularly those professional middle class voters who left the Tories last time round because they were cross about Brexit. And then they'll be able to go back to, do you want to take this risk on Jeremy Corbyn and these very radical policies?
Katie, do you have any sense of how the interview has gone down in Labour circles?
Well, I think Angela Rayner is one of the more outspoken Labour members. And initially she was hailed as a Corbynista because she was one of the few Labour MPs who seemed quite happy serving in Jeremy Corbyn's shadow cabinet on a more than a week basis or not resigning. But since then, I think she's kind of been quite keen to say that she doesn't belong to any faction of the Labour Party. She is just Labour, so she doesn't want to go against some of her colleagues who would be seen as anti-Corbynista, and she doesn't want to be seen just as a Corbynista type character. I think in general, this idea of kind of the shit or bust strategy, and to be fair to her, she doesn't say it's a complete shit or bust strategy, so it's a bit of a shit or bust strategy. So there is a level of
corporate,
yeah, exactly. But I think, to be honest, the whole Corbyn vision of Labour is quite a radical vision, and they kind of relish in that. You also had John McDonnell, obviously, at Labour conference suggesting that they are wargaming in case there was a run on the pound. Since then, they have tried to row back from that because I think they've realised it is a damaging thing to say. But it is a constant balance they have to somehow strike between trying to be this radical socialism for the 21st century party and also one that appeals to a country that still thinks the Conservatives are the ones that can be most trusted on the economy.
Finally, James, this row has broken out over this new Michael Wolff book about Trump's White House. What has it shown us about Trump's presidency?
Just when you thought it couldn't get any crazier, you've got the president releasing statements about his former strategist, the guy who helped him win the presidential election, saying when he not only lost his job, he lost his mind. I mean, this is, you've got Steve Bannon, the aforementioned strategist, saying there's a third chance of Trump being impeached, a third chance of him being forced to resign, and a third chance of him making it to the end of his first term. I mean, this is, you see all of the enmities and tensions of a Trump White House in Technicolor in this book. Now, it is a quite remarkable tale. Even if everything is not, you know, totally as it seems, it does lift the lid on just how dysfunctional this White House is. And I think it makes you think on it does make you feel a certain sympathy for the British government in this respect, actually all foreign governments, which is you realise just how unpredictable Trump is. And how do you end up, how do you deal diplomatically with an administration where it is so unclear where the real power lies? There's a wonderful bit in there that the chap who is now the White House Chief of Staff was appointed to the job without ever being formally asked if he wanted to do the job or not. And you do realise this. I think the bigger consequence of this is it has put some real legs on this whole Trump-Russia issue, because for the first time you've got someone from inside the Trump camp publicly spilling some beans on what went on and why this is problematic. And I think this will make more and more people think, oh, maybe this Mueller investigation really is going to end up going somewhere.
Thank you, James, and thank you, Katie. And just a reminder that you can subscribe to this podcast on the iTunes store. It's called Coffee House Shots. Just a reminder that we've got a special subscription offer to The Spectator. If you get 12 issues for just £12, which includes full access to all of our website and apps, it now also comes with a Moleskine notebook worth £20. To get this, just go to spectator.co.uk/podoffer.